This is a Collider.com audio interview.
How are you doing today, sir?
I'm great, thanks.
Did you guys see the movie?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes, we did.
Did you see it last night?
Yeah.
I wanted to see it with an audience.
Yeah.
Even a tough crowd like you guys.
And it seemed, they invited people into
it. Yeah, they did, yeah. But it was good. I got some laughs from the people. I was like, oh my God, it's infectious. And then everybody starts going, yeah, that is pretty funny. Farting's going on a little long, but it is pretty funny.
I want to let you know that I had the loudest laugh for the I Shat My Pants.
Oh, good. Thank you. Thank you. I shat my pants. That was one of my fabulous audition lines. And I thought, God, I'm going to say that in the movie. I'd love it.
Do you embrace that kind of stuff? Like,
well, I know. I've never done a spoof movie before. I mean, everybody who does a straight movie always spoofs it on the side, you know, but they never bring it on. And the producers and directors were really bright to go, now let's really do the superhero, because we all love superhero movies. And then to see them do this was a challenge. As soon as I sat down with Craig Mazin, I was supposed to be the crazy editor part. And it was just coming to meet and greet, because, yeah, I love you, you're great, I love you, you can do it. Nobody can do it like you, you'll be terrific. And then we just started talking and doing all this whole thing, and God, he's so funny. Have you sat with him yet?
Not yet.
He's one of the funniest human beings I've ever met. He's just quick, just smart, and I love him. So anyway, I was just thought it was great. Met with him. We did the old, all right, kid, put it in. You know, like we're all moguls with the old Warner Brothers. It was so funny. So on the way out, doorknob therapy, I said, hey, who's playing the hourglass? Lou Landers. He goes, what? Why don't you just take that material and come in tomorrow and give it a run? We'll play with it. I went, great. Took it home, went in the next day, we worked for like an hour and a half, and he said, ah, it's great. Bob Weinstein walked in, and he said I was the easiest cast of everybody. So I said, yes! So my one-day part turned into the run of the movie, which was really fun.
So what's the difference? You've done the villain in a lot of the, I mean, straight comedies is a weird way to say it, but so what's the difference to do the outright spoof of it?
Laughter. Laughter's good. It's just funny the way he says some of the stupidest lines in the world. And Craig Mazin said to me, you know how hard it is to write those stupid lines? It's like, it's so funny. You basically you're giving carte blanche to be as big and chew as much scenery as you can. Because, well, first of all, a superhero needs a supervillain, or else, you know, they made a movie about it. I think it was called Mystery Men. It was like, we need a supervillain. Who can we get? Anyway, so, but it's just carte blanche to do everything. And then plus, when you give you that kick-ass, sexy, hot, uncomfortable costume, oh my God, I love that. It took forever to put it on, but once you're in it, you are tougher and bigger and meaner than everyone when they're out. It's just, it was an absolute riot to do it.
Did you keep the costume?
No, but I'm working on that. So, but it only takes four people to put it together. That's the problem. I'd have to train my children. No, not that way. Because everything's like little tiny screws and things like that. And you gotta pull it in. I had to wear a man girdle. Yeah, I meant it. I said it. Because I had to look like this. Whoa. So it was fun.
How much ad-libbing is done on a set like this? I mean, where you think of bits or a pratfall or whatever. And how much did you have input into maybe your character and maybe the costume?
I had a lot of input into how I walked and moved in the costume, but mostly everything was scripted. Now, I did ad lib a couple of things. I don't think they made it to the movie, but Craig really knows what he wants. He knows what's funny. On the set, there was like on the day, a thing that did last in the movie was I go to kill him, and he figured I have to douchebag. That was one of the funniest moments. Douchebag night. It was unbelievable. But anyway, I go backstage, I throw the thing away, and he goes, finally, I got you, Lou. And I turn around, and he looks away, and it could be that guy. And I go to kill him, because that's how I suck his energy out. And then he said, okay, put your hand back. Hey, put your hand back and put it in your nose. Yeah, do that. So we did it like 8 times. I'm going, oh my God. It's funny. And then it's like, oh my God, this is probably going to end up in the movie. That's how people, how other smarter actors protect themselves. They just go, I just can't make that work. Was that one finger or two? I don't. Is it a thumb? Yeah, then they go, oh yeah, okay, well, we'll move on. But I, of course, will try anything. And actually, it was kind of funny. But at the time, it was an improv moment that I thought was going to go to hell, but it actually worked. So
you've been playing the villain in these comedies for a long time. When did that start for you?
That's a good question. And to think that they didn't think of me right out in front and say, hey, you're a super villain. You're perfect. You're a villain, all these things. It started with, Thelma and Louise when I was like the villainous husband. But, you know, they have to either choose to go back to their husbands or go over the cliff. So you figure you got to be pretty woo out there. And they chose the cliff, clearly. But that's what really started. And then I was offered every, you know, redneck, you know, hayseed in the world. And I just... You know, I tried to do a different spin on different things at the same time. Like, immediately after this movie, I went and did a serious drama. Just, you know, you have to balance them out. But I've been doing a lot of villains, like in Happy Gilmore. And so it basically started with Thelma and Louise, and I started really enjoying it. I've played the other guys, and it's sort of like, you know, it's good. You're right there. You're the lead guy, and you have a lot of empathy, and that's good. I like playing the villain guys that also have flaws. But they don't let you do that sometimes. They wanted the story to be black and white. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of gray. Which is unfortunate, but... Because I've been asked to do that, and I put that in, and it never makes the movie. And I'm like, oh, God. Because it just gives... You can't play him as a villain. You got to play him as a person first. You know, that has different needs. So... but not Lou. Lou just wanted to take over the world, so you can't blame him. But he had that accident in the chair, so you can't really blame the guy.
How many times have you turned around with someone saying shooter?
Ooh, a day? About 8 a day. Yeah, it's a lot. It's good. I used to be, like, in airports, it's the worst, because people, like, they get a little bit more bold now. Back in the day, it was like, oh, shooter, my God. And as I walked about 8, you know, 15 yards, they went, hey, shooter! They went, and I go, yeah, shooter, like this, and just keep walking. And it's just so great, but now it's like, dude, shooter! And then, yep, how you doing? And it's great that I just heard from the military. I was doing a thing last night, meeting some of our brave men and women coming back, and they said it's the number one comedy they always watch, and they watch it every week. It's like Happy Gilmore, put her in, and just laugh, and that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. But I do get it a lot, and especially at sporting events and airports and things like that.
I was also going to do. You were in Fanboys, which has been delayed and all that stuff. Could you talk a little bit about your character in the film, and also, do you know what's going on with the movie?
First question, I play the lead boy's father, Sam Christian's father, and I want him in the family business and that kind of thing. It's a nice little thing. It's basically cameos that brought a lot of people in. As you know, they've got everybody but Harrison Ford from the Star Wars movies, but he was busy doing something. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, it's Dimension Films. What I was told was, so anyway, let me tell you, I plays my son and he goes on this road trip and I wanted to give him the business, and my older son is like a total buffoon and he ends up running this car business, and I spend too much time with his son, clearly, because it's really, they wanted me to be tan. You remember that old lady in the Farrelly Brothers movie, Something About Mary? She's like, she looks like a leather suitcase. Yeah, that's me in this movie.
I just gruff guy like this. He only talks like this. And he says, come on, kid, let's do this. And he's getting, you know, used car salesman. A lot of fun to do. Anyway, the movie is 75% great.
So the 25% is being rewritten and reshot with Seth Rogen. He's doing a pass on it. Because they like this movie. They just said, hey, it's almost there. Let's put a little bit more time and money and effort into it and make it just a winner.
So are you going to have to go back and reshoot anything?
Me? I don't think so. No, they said my stuff was great. So they just... It was story. It's basically story. They wanted to get a little bit more of... and this one was gags. So, you know, let's bring in some tits. Oh, yeah, Pam Anderson. Let's get her in here. Let's bring in some, you know... Let's who else can we spoof? Wolfman. Let's bring him in. That kind of stuff. So.
You think they'll leave the cancer part in it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on with them thinking about removing the cancer storyline. Like, they've been testing it with both versions.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
I didn't know that much, even.
Yeah, they...
I thought they'd leave it in, because I thought that's the script we made.
That's exactly what most fans are thinking.
Yeah.
But their Weinstein Company, just sorry for taking this on a turn, but the Weinstein Company is doing two different versions, one with cancer, one without. And they're testing it, and Steve Brill has come in, and they're kind of fucking with the movie.
Well, yeah, but ultimately trying to make it better, because the movie is supposed to be quite great, but it just needs a little bit of tweaking. So I thought the cancer thing gave him the impetus to go.
Yes.
That was, and there's cancer everywhere. So I hope they don't lose it.
With this film, what scene did you do that you just couldn't get through without laughing?
And this movie, let's see, it was the I Shat Myself. That scene was, we did it a lot, and we just tried to get each other going, and then it was, and then we tried different ways of doing it and different things, but I think that what we have is one of the earlier takes. But it was, I mean, it was so silly. And my job was to correct the crew up. It's your only audience right there. Yeah. So it was working pretty good there. And then it's amazing. I mean, when I watched that the flatulent scene, if you will, I said, I cannot believe it. It's funny. And then, oh, my God, you get repulsed. And then it goes this way. And you go, it's too funny. The tears and the thing out of her nose. And, oh, my God, it's funny. So I was watching that one while they were doing it because I came in the blew in the door the next minute. And you want to react to things like that. Like I wanted to do this take where I was going, ooh, or something because you know, of the gaseous smell. But didn't make it. So anyway, it's amazing when they get into the editing room with a movie like this, it's and they know what they're doing. God knows that they're successful. They just cut, gag, air? No, cut that out. Gag. Yeah. It's really something. And that's why I think people that will see it will want to see it again just because they missed it. Missed a lot of it because of the laughter. And there were laughters last night that people missed the next joke, the next two jokes. Well, I thought that was great.
Yeah. Were you studying Willem Dafoe and Spider-Man?
I looked at Spider-Man, but mostly that did not help me. You know what helped me? Looking at a scary movie, looking at Airplane, looking at Spoof. And I needed to do it. And I was amazed. One day I came in and I said, did you see Scary Movie 4 when that wonderful actress, I don't remember her name, but she played the best friend of Anna Faris.
Regina
Hall. She's in this one too. She was so funny. She did this thing with the spasm with the Alka-Seltzer suds coming in. And I was like, oh my God. I had to rewind it and play it three more times. And I laughed every time. It was just sick. And I just thought, that is funny. This, I get it, good. So I brought it in and I shared it with some of my co-stars and they was like, yeah, we should have looked at this. I'm like, yeah, it's great. This is what we're doing. This is the, you know, this is an island unto himself. This is spoofing. This is parody. This is not comedy, straight comedy. This is parody comedy. So it's like it's comedy with a twist. Comedy with like almost smart comedy. It helps if you've seen Spider-Man. It helps if you've seen the Wolverines and all the, you know, the superhero movie. But and a lot of our fans that'll come to this have. But if you haven't, it's still funny. So.
So how was it acting opposite Leslie Nielsen and Marion Ross?
Well, I didn't do enough with them. I mean, I came in and killed Marion, which is great. It's a good time. Nice to see you going down. Bang. And I didn't get a chance to work with Albert. Of course, he was there a couple days, so I came down the set and watched him work. He has the presence and the charisma and the just the unique Leslie Nielsen delivery. You could give this man anything to say, and he can make it work. It's something totally retarded. I basically lifted from him when I had to say that line about, well, you know, family, things about family, and, you know, Lance is the only family I have. Fruitcake? No, just never met the... No, I never married. Fruitcake? No, just never met the right woman. It's just the way he just kind of... Anyway, we did that a lot of times, too, and yeah, it's funny. But that's the way he did it. He's so good.
Sorry. So. You've done a few movies since Superhero Movie. Could you talk about some of the other films you have coming out?
Well, yes. I went headlong into a drama after this wacky spoofing that we were doing. And it's written by a man who's written like 14 movies together and also happens to be a brilliant lawyer in that he, you know, would make hundreds of millions of dollars for his... representing IBM against CBS or something, he would win. So he's this guy who's just a real genius from Yale. And this is a true story of his life in college when it's 15 of the people. It's not like, you know, where Bush went with the whole, what was that called, the skull and bones. It's a different thing. It's like the beginning of group therapy. And this was back in, you know, in the 60s and 70s. And he, well, actually 60s when he was doing it, maybe longer. But it still goes on every year. About 15 of the sharpest, brightest people, not unlike this room, would get together and see how they're going to impact the world. And then this is a movie with the shade, if you will, of someone dying and having the wish that we get together and talk about and work the program that we came up with in college. And it still goes on to this day from what I hear. And it's really interesting. And it was all about... failed dreams or compromise or settling for something or and things like that. And people who didn't settle are still, you know, out there chasing. albeit with, you know, little peccadilloes like, you know, alcoholism. Yeah, I was an alcoholic. But doing what I love to do and that kind of thing. One guy ran a studio, and it was like a Brad Gray. It was a very interesting story and based on real people. And that was very interesting. Shot in New York City. And I have several more coming out. I have a love story that's really beautiful based on a true story also called My Sexiest Year. And Harvey Keitel plays the dad, Frankie Muniz is the son, and the model of his sexiest year is Amber Valletta. So I bookend the movie playing him as a, you know, 25 years later, and having spent that summer, we flashbang to the amazing summer where his mother's dying of cancer, played by Francis Fisher, and he has to go live with his dad, who's sort of this wheeler dealer gambler guy down in Florida. And it's a great story. This kid meets this model, and then she embraces him, and it's a coming of age thing, and everybody assumes he's the hottest kid in the world because he's down with all these rich people down in Florida. And he and Frankie Muniz does a great job. Harvey does a brilliant job as always. It's my third movie with him, and I play him growing up. So I have a love scene in the end of the movie with this girl that I come to give her thanks for letting me become a very successful novelist, and I track her down. She's doing the old Lana Turner, or not Lana Turner, was one of those other great actresses back in the day, ended up being a waitress at an airport diner, mm-hmm. and after being a super successful actress in Hollywood.
Who plays that role?
Amber Valletta.
Oh.
Yeah. She plays the supermodel, and then we cut 25 years later, and then she's...
Oh, so she's just... Okay.
So you come back to thank her for sleeping with you?
Pretty much, and how I could wrote that book about that, and all the stuff around that book that was really interesting, and how that just made me a man that summer. It's really kind of a cool thing. It's played down at the South Beach Film Festival, Miami Film Festival, and it'll come out this summer or later, maybe fall. And then see what else I got going. I got we talked about Fanboys. Oh, Player 5150, very interesting story. And that's all we are, really, goat singers. We're just storytellers. This one's about gambling or the perils thereof, and. Ethan Embry does a beautiful job in it, and I played his dad in Dutch, and I see this kid growing up, and he takes his shirt back, and he has a tattoo of a cross like this. And I said, what the hell is that? He goes, that's what happens when you start acting when you're 9 in Hollywood. Wow. Anyway, but he's brilliant. He plays this guy who gets a little bit over his head, and you see the gambling. He can get himself out of it, and he says, I'm the bookie, and I want my stuff, and I don't around. I want it. I want it when I want it. I lend you stuff. I carry you for 3 months, and I get very angry. I get a wonderful, compassionate villain. I like to call that one. He gives a guy a break. He's, you know, he's. But I got people to answer to too. You know, Bob Gunton's in it. I answer to him. So it all gets passed down this thing. So anyway, he gets it. I don't want to give it away too much, but it is an allegory for what you can get in trouble to if you start gambling over your head. Simple little things like betting on ball games. Like, you know, what you guys are doing here in the basketball thing. Simple, what you talking about, right? Well, he gets a little bit over his head, and it's a good good lesson, I think. So that's good.
Do you see any theater in the future?
I absolutely do. I am hoping. The hardest part about theater right now is I have a family here in L.A. And, man, as much as I love doing theater, I only want to do it in New York because I want to make you want to make every minute count. You want to do the best of the best. And I had a chance to do that. I did Chicago and playing Billy Flynn, and I absolutely loved it. They loved me. It was one of the highlights of my my career. When I was going out there, it was the 10-year reunion. They had called me back to do a second stint. And you look out in the audience, and there's Barbara Walters and Sidney Lumet and Sidney Pollack. And you're going to go, and they're all dressed up in, you know, monkey suits. And you're going, and you come out, and there's 10 Roxys and 10 Velmas and 8 Billys and 5 Amoses. And it's just... crazy, and they choreographed this whole thing, all the big stars that had played these parts over the years and done it for so long. It was a home run, and it was chill. So every time you stepped out on the stage, another actor would step out in the part, you'd step away, and then, you know, James Norton would come out and sing, you know, one of the songs. They'd clap for about 3 minutes, and it was just, whoa, great. So, and I love it, and I want to do it, but I just, the commitment is a year when you want to create something, and you want to make some noise, and do that. So right now, I'm doing the replacement parts, because I'm in and out in 3 months. Because I'll miss my kid, you know, graduating or something, and I'll kick myself. So it's not about another movie or another gig, it's about life first. And that's why I was so grateful that we shot this movie in Los Angeles. So when I wasn't working, I was in my own bed, kissing my family, and I was extremely grateful. And because it could have very easily been in Canada, Vancouver, Toronto, something. So.
And do you see a sequel to this one? There's been Scary Movie 1, 2, 3. Would you like to play that role again?
Knock wood. I would. And the thing is, you can die in a movie, and that's so... And these movies, it's like, no, I thought you were dead. Yeah, I thought you were too. Anyway, so... that's how they fix it.
That's right.
It's so funny. We laugh so hard. I pray that we do sequels. It's all about how this one performs. They have a lot riding on it. You know, you try to pick a weekend that's going to be great, but there's other, that 21's getting plastered everywhere, and you know, that looks good, and the other thing looks good. You never know. Spoof people who love those action movies, of which there are plenty, mm-hmm. are going to be attracted to this movie, so I think it's going to do well. So we pray for a big weekend. Something with a 2 in front of it would be nice. Yeah, 3 maybe. Yeah.
Sorry,